KPTW News Time is 8:06. You're listening to the local news hour. I'm Roger Goldman. Let's see what's in store for our weather this weekend. Hopefully it's not more of the same.
Happy Friday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch Back. We're looking at increasing clouds as we go throughout your Friday. By Friday afternoon, we'll start to see the chance of some isolated valley rain and mountain snow showers developing. And that'll be the case with us not only for this afternoon, but right on through your Friday evening as well, as that moisture level expects to increase as we go throughout the evening hours. High temperatures will be in the mid-40s in Park City. We'll see those highs right around 50 in the Heber Valley. As we go into your Saturday, expect off and on periods of rain and snow in the mountains and also in the valleys. We'll see that chance of a rain-snow mix Saturday morning for places like the Heber Valley and Park City, changing over to more rain as we go throughout the day as temperatures climb into the 40s. We'll be in the low 40s for us in Park City, with temperatures climbing into the upper 40s in the Heber Valley. We'll stick with off and on periods of cloudy skies and periods of rain showers moving through the area as we get into your Sunday. High temperatures will be in the mid-40s in Park City on Sunday, with highs right around 50 in the Heber Valley. As we move into next week, the weather pattern remains fairly unsettled and active. We'll see a little bit of a lull as we get past Monday morning. We'll have some leftover rain showers Monday morning, drying out during the afternoon hours on Monday, but then the next wave of moisture starts to get closer to the area. But I do think we eke out a dry Tuesday. Tuesday's your day next week. That's primarily dry and should be fairly calm out there, because as we get into your Wednesday, oh yes, we know it's Christmas Eve on your Wednesday. And yeah, we're going to be looking at some fairly mild conditions for Christmas time, that's for sure. Temperatures will be in the mid-40s for highs for you in Park City, with highs around 50 in the Heber Valley. So that means as our next storm system moves in, look for increasing chances of a rain-snow mix in Park City as we get into your Wednesday afternoon and evening, with a chance of valley rainfall for us over in the Heber area. As we move into your Christmas Day, expect the potential of rain and snow mixed together in the Park City area, with a chance of some rain and snow mix getting down as far south as the Heber Valley. Accumulations look to primarily be well above 7,500 feet. Let's look at your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Kanes.
We'll be talking more about weather later in the broadcast when we discuss with the National Weather Service the context, a bit of the context for what we're seeing. But now let's go and find out what's going on in the mountains this weekend for the avalanche report. Who's on the phone with me this morning?
Hey, good morning. This is Bo Torrey.
Hi, Bo. Thanks for being here.
So thanks for having me on.
So, Bo, we got this rain, we got this warmth. What's that mean for the backcountry?
Well, that's a great question. It doesn't feel like winter, you know, moving around the valley, but up high, we still have a cold winter snowpack above about 8,000 feet. Things start to really deepen, and that's where we have a layered snowpack and where we can start to encounter some of our avalanche problems.
Okay, so what are you telling people about what they should do this weekend? How dangerous is it up there?
Well, right now we have a generally a low avalanche hazard, but as we heard, our weather is going to change, and with that, we expect to see things start to change in the mountains. We expect our avalanche hazard to rise to moderate potentially by the end of the day, more likely by tomorrow, as the strong winds and heavy snowfall really start to develop slabs into cohesive layers and produce avalanches. Hopefully this active period does continue into the next week, and that's when we're going to start to see the hazard continually rise and things to really start to improve. And we expect to see more people start to travel in the mountains as conditions and as coverage improves. And that's when we may see some people encountering more avalanches. Right now, you really have to go out of your way to get into high elevation terrain to find it. But there's just not a lot of people out doing that quite yet.
I was going to ask you that. Are there places where it's like fun to travel at this point in time? I mean, it sounds like there's not all that much up there, even above 8,000 feet.
There's not a lot, but there is some. I mean, the beauty is in the eye of the beholder. If you want to travel up high, you can get up there. The ski quality, the snowmobile quality, it's not what we're used to by any means, but it's. Hard to find the hazard. You have to really, like you said, go up high to get into the steeper alpine slopes.
Okay, Bo, thanks and have a good weekend.
Thanks a lot. You too. Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye. Coming up, I'm speaking with Rabbi Yudi Steiger of Chabad of Park City about the upcoming Hanukkah parade. Then Mayor Nan Worrell will join it. Nan Worrell will join us with a recap of last night's city council meeting and a look back at her tenure as mayor. And we are going to finish our hour by talking weather. We're going to have National Weather Service meteorologist Brittany Whitlam. We're going to be talking about the unusual weather pattern we're seeing this December and how it fits in context. So stay tuned.
The wait for the Utah Department of Transportation to decide on a bypass route is nearly over. The agency said Wednesday it will publish its draft environmental impact statement on January 7th. That document, known as an EIS, will include UDOT's preferred route, plus details about how the future road will affect local property owners and the environment. Residents will then have 60 days to comment on the route from January 9th through March 9th. UDOT says there are several opportunities for locals to learn more about the plans and share their thoughts. UDOT leaders will present their findings to the Wasatch County Council on January 14th and the Heber City Council on January 20th. Both meetings begin at 4 p.m. Residents can also attend two public meetings. The first option is online, January 27th at 6 p.m. However, UDOT will not take formal comments at this meeting. Residents can share feedback in person at an open house the next day, January 28th, at 5:30 p.m. at the Wasatch High School Library. UDOT says locals will be encouraged to sign up in advance if they'd like to comment. More details about the public hearing will be published with the draft EIS showing the bypass route January 7th. People can also share comments by phone, email, comment drop-off box, and on UDOT's website. UDOT's route will be one of two finalists previously shared for the bypass. One option keeps highway traffic on North US 40 until just north of downtown Heber City, then diverts drivers west of town to connect to 189. The other option would construct a road through part of the North Fields. Both options would include frontage roads along US 40 for local traffic. Constructing the highway will cost upwards of $580 million, according to UDOT estimates. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Tonight marks the sixth night of Hanukkah, and tomorrow night, the holiday will be celebrated here in Park City with the annual Hanukkah Car Parade. Here to talk about the holiday, the parade, and the significance of public celebration in light of the events last week in Australia is Rabbi Yudi Steiger of Chabad of Park City. Rabbi, thanks for joining me this morning.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start with a little background. What does the Hanukkah holiday celebrate?
Hanukkah celebrates the power of light, faith, and resilience. Over 2,000 years ago, a small group of Jews set up to a powerful empire that tried to raise their religious identity. And against all odds, this small army was able to win the war and reclaim the right to live openly and as proud Jewish people. And after the Syrian Greeks destroyed the temple, the Jewish people went back into the temple to reclaim and rededicate the temple. And back in the days, they would light the menorah every single day, and they wanted to light the menorah. They wanted to continue all the rituals that they would do prior to the war with the Syrian Greeks, and they see there's no oil, there's no pure oil to be able to light the menorah. And finally, they searched and searched, and after some people said, let's give up, there's no hope to find another jug of oil, Judah the Maccabee continued searching and found one small jug of oil. And he said, we never run out of light. We search and we'll find it. And they found just enough oil to be able to kindle the menorah for one day. And it would take them 8 days to go and get more pure olive oil. And so most of the people were, what's the point of lighting for the first day? But Judah the Maccabee says, we have to shine our light. We got to do it. They lit for one day, and miraculously, it lasted for 8 days. And that's what we celebrate 2,000 years later. We still celebrate that victory, and we do that by lighting the menorahs and by spreading light.
And that's why the menorah, the holiday lasts 8 days, to commemorate those 8 days.
That's exactly, yep. That's why we celebrate Hanukkah for 8 days, and every day we start on the first day with one candle, and then we increase every night another candle until the eighth night, where we have a full menorah shining brightly.
Okay, what are some of the traditions that are associated with celebrating the Hanukkah holiday?
So as we just mentioned, the main tradition is people light the menorahs, and we have these little kits, menorah kits with candles that we've been distributing to the people in the community or people that are visiting. And we eat mainly oily foods because the miracle happened with oil. So we eat sufganiyat, which is donuts, and we eat latkes fried in oil, and we play the dreidel also, which is the tradition behind the dreidel also historically is that the Jewish people were not allowed to study Torah to keep their faith, so they would hide and study Torah, and when they would hear that the enemy would approach, what they would do is they would hide their Bibles, they would hide their scrolls, and they would take out the dreidel, which was a cultural game back at the time. They would take it out and play and just pretend as that they gathered to play the dreidel rather than study Torah.
Okay, that's one I've never heard before, Rabbi. Yeah. It was a cover story, basically.
It's a cover story. That's where it comes from. Yes. And today, people make a lot of people play, and it becomes a tradition where families come together to play the dreidel and celebrate the holiday.
And so, let me ask you, Rabbi, for our listeners who may not be familiar, never had the joys of eating a potato latke. What's in a latke, and why is that so associated? Is it associated with the holiday because of the oil again?
It is associated with the oil. It's a good question historically when the latke came into being. I mean, the potato was, in Eastern Europe, it's the food that people could afford. People were able to afford. So they just tried doing a lot of different foods with potato, and they just took potato and you grate it and you make it and you fry it. That's basically it.
It's basically potato, egg, and salt and oil.
Yes, that's it. That's what it is. Yes.
So, okay.
I can still feel the hangover from my
last night. Did you have some last night? And they do sit heavy in the stomach.
They do.
So what are the details of the car parade tomorrow?
So we, the parade is Saturday night, and it's 7 p.m., leaving from City Park. And why is it important to have the parade now? Because from, as I mentioned, with the game of dreidel, they want us to hide. They want us to crawl in a closet. It's happened thousands of years ago. They want us to hide our Judaism. And today, more than ever, we see that. We see our enemies, they try to take away our joy. On Simchat Torah, which was October 7th of 2023, the day of dancing, the day of celebrating with the Torah, the most joyous day in the Jewish calendar, they came to take away our joy. This past year on Yom Kippur in Manchester, they tried to tear us apart from God. And then they say, what? They can't take away our joy. They can't tear us apart. They can't take us away from God. And they try on Hanukkah, the festival of light. That's when we're supposed to shine our light. They come for us on the first night of Hanukkah in Bondi, Sydney, Australia, at the Chabad-hosted event right on the beach. And they try to dim that light. And unfortunately, we lost one of my colleagues. And so I'm in touch with the community. I've been in touch with the community in Sydney, Australia. And there's so much grief. They really need support right now. The support that we can give them from Park City is to show that we're not going to cower. We're going to go out there with our menorahs right on Main Street here in Park City and show everyone that we are proud Jews. One of the families in Australia, one of the rabbis in Australia, after October 7th, decided to have their menorahs up all year, the menorah up all year, as a sign of support. The community, was devastated, and they felt that keeping the menorah out all year on their porch would be a good way to kind of shine a light, to still show everyone that they're proud Jews. And right after the first night of Hanukkah, after what happened, after the massacre, their kids were crying, say, please, mom and dad, please take down the menorah. And the parent says, no, we're not going to take it down. And the kids were screaming, please, we're going to be a target. We're a target right now just by displaying a menorah outside our home. And they had no choice. And they took it away. The parents took down their menorah. It's been there for over 2 years now. They took it down. The next day, their Christian friends saw that the menorah is not there anymore. They asked them, what's going on? Why did you take it down? And they told them what their kids are petrified of having the menorah out, them being a target. And they said, we're not going to let it happen. And they put it back up, and they told their kids, we're not going to cower. We're not going to give in. We're not going to hide our Judaism. And what we're doing here in Park City, what we did, we had the menorah, beautiful menorah lighting on Tuesday, where we had our largest turnout ever. And that's what happens. When they try to crush us, we shine brighter. And that's in the times of the temple. They would light the menorah with olive oil, and many people today also still light their menorahs with olive oil, like I personally do. And how do you get oil out of olives? You take the olives, you crush them. You crush them, and then the oil comes out. And that's what happens with us, with the Jewish people. That's one of the messages of Hanukkah. Also, when we're crushed, our oil, we shine. And that's what we'll be doing.
And Rabbi, has that been the reaction to by the Jewish community worldwide to what happened in Australia? Have you heard others sort of talk about the importance of shining your light?
Absolutely. The message we're telling people is that we're never going to run out of light. Just as we saw in the times of the miracle of Hanukkah that with the Maccabees, we never run out of light. We have light. And the message should be very, very clear out there to our enemies. Look, you tried... You tried, right? You tried our best. You tried to put the community into mourning. You tried to crush us, but we shine right here in Park City, the largest menorah, and it's all around the world. At first, the first reaction is always like, okay, let's retreat. Let's go back. Let's take a step back. We don't want to be target, and you know we're not going to be delusional and say people don't have here also in Park City don't have. People are not worried. People are worried, and people were asking about security forces here in Park City also, and just want to take this moment also to thank the police department, city council, the fire department who was there to cheer us up also on Tuesday. This community has truly been very, very supportive. But yes, people are worried. They are worried, and at the same time also, they want to shine bright.
So Rabbi, where does this fit in the pattern of anti-Semitic incidents? I know there's been a pattern in Australia. Are we also seeing an increase in anti-Semitic incidents in other parts of the world?
Yes, it is all around the world. I just came back from Europe and experienced in several countries anti-Semitism. Not as much, to be honest, as the world wants to portray, but I have experienced some anti-Semitism in Europe just now. But I think it's very, very simple. It's the leaders that have to stand up and make a stand, make very, very clear that anti-Semitism is not being tolerated. And then you cannot reward terrorism. If you reward terror, then... It's people feel, okay, the government has our back, and we can do it.
Yeah.
And so it's very, very important for our leaders to stand up very firmly and to say, this is not okay.
Okay, Rabbi, once again, let's remind our viewers in the parade, can anybody drive their vehicle in the parade? How does it work?
Good question. If someone wants to join the parade, best is to reach out to me directly. And... via email, and that's rabbi, R-A-B-B-I, at jewishparkcity.com. And we'd love to have them join the parade and bring more light to Park City. And it's always people love it. We drive on Main Street, and people always cheer us on. People love it. So be part of it.
Do people decorate their cars with menorahs
you could bring your own decorations on the cars, and we have special car menorahs also to put on top of your car. Yes, join us and be part of it.
And Rabbi, if people are interested in learning more about Chabad of Park City, again, they can contact you.
Absolutely. Chabad of Park City, we're your address for anything Jewish, anything you need to know. You know, if you need power, you go to Rocky Mountain Power. If you need You know where to go if you need anything Jewish. That's my address, rabbi@jewishproximity.com. We're here for you always.
Rabbi Yudi Steiger, thanks for spending time with us this morning.
Thank you so much.
Okay, the Park City Council held what would be a regular meeting last night, but it was a little bit special. Here with a debrief is Mayor Nan Worrell. Good morning, Mayor. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And a little bit special because it was your last meeting.
It was, yes. And Councilmember Rubel's.
We're going to get to that. I want to first talk about what got accomplished last night. I understand that the Clark Ranch conservation easement was on the agenda. Can you explain what was decided and where we go from here?
Oh, it's exciting. It's really exciting for me personally because this has been going on since I was on the city council and ending planning commission and then on the city council to conserve that land. And I was really thrilled that it happened last night. So the council adopted a 329-acre conservation easement on Clark Ranch, and then another 15 acres has been set aside. And of that 15 acres, 10 will be developed into a housing project, hopefully. And the other 5 acres will be conserved in a similar manner to the conservation easement.
So it's unusual to me to talk about sort of a thing, we're going to do this many acres of this and this many acres of that, without identifying which acres are what.
Okay. Exactly.
So why is it happening in this way?
There's an area that's been set aside from way back when COSAC originally came up with the idea to conserve the area. And we are partnering with the Alexander Company. Excuse my voice, my cat slept on my pillow.
You're allergic to your cat?
I am. Or he's allergic to me or something here. There's a question where on the property is the best place to put that affordable housing community. And so the council set aside 15 acres, and then within that 15 acres, the best 10 acres will be decided on. And so the next step that was suggested by staff was that the council sit down early next year with the Planning Commission and decide, and as well as the Alexander Company, and determine which of the 10 acres are going to be affordable housing will be carved out specifically for that, and then another easement will be put on the remaining 5 acres.
Any sense of how long it will take to drive that one to a decision?
Hopefully by the end of first quarter. Okay. That's staff's projection. I mean, we want to move this. We want to move it really fast and get the rest of the land protected, get some easement on it.
Okay. I want to talk about looking back at your tenure, but first let's just take a minute and see if you have any comments on the tenure of Jeremy Rubel.
You know, he is a smart guy. He has really had made the council step up. You know, had us think about things in a different way, you know, in terms of process, in terms of quality assurance and those type of things. So he's had a tremendous impact on how the council operates, and I'm very grateful. I have tremendous respect for him.
Okay, I take. Now let's talk about you. This, as we mentioned, this is your last debrief, and your tenure as mayor is just about over. I always like to ask things in threes.
Yeah.
So what are 3 things you are most proud of to have accomplished during your tenure?
Only 3?
Well, you can do as many as you want, but we start with 3.
Well, actually, I'm really proud that the council put easements on 2 pieces of property. One was Treasure Hill, and the other last night was the Clark Ranch conservation easement. We opened the Three Kings Water Treatment Plant, which is the largest infrastructure project in the history of Park City, and cut the ribbon on that a year and a half ago.
I guess it's a little bit ironic that one of your proudest moments deals with refuse, but okay.
I love that we've saved land. I love that we've cleaned up our water. I love that at 10 o'clock this morning, I'm going to cut the ribbon on Engine House, which is our largest affordable housing project that the city has had. It's our first public-private partnership. And it's also our first rental product. Before, all of our affordable units have been for sale, and this one is a rental. So it has 99 affordable units in it. And I'm just really excited for our workforce, our service workers, our teachers, to be able to live right here in the heart of town where they can walk or bike or take transit to wherever they need to go.
And how long did it take to get that one from concept to today?
I'm not sure about when it first went to Planning Commission, but we broke ground 2 years ago in October, so it was fast.
It was fast,
It was fast, yeah. I'm really proud of it, and it's beautiful inside.
And just to digress a minute, what is your perspective? This is a rental project, and mm-hmm. is it your view that going forward, public assisted housing, employee housing, should be oriented more toward rental products than equity products?
I think there's a lot of challenges with equity products that we're learning. You know, I think you don't know what you don't know when you start out. And certainly we've seen some challenges with homeowners in the affordable projects being able to keep up with the maintenance that's required and keeping enough in their reserve fund to be able to do roof repairs or painting or whatever it is. So, you know, I know that the city is really looking at, you know, what role do we play in helping keep those properties, you know, maintained.
Okay. And any other accomplishments you want to highlight before I ask you about what you didn't get done?
Childcare. I'm very proud of our childcare program. It's innovative. It's been recognized nationally. I spoke in Washington, D.C. Michelle Downard, our resident advocate, has spoken at a couple of conferences, and we have several invites on the calendar for next year to speak at other places. You know, it was an innovative program. The council stepped out on a limb, and we weren't really sure what we were supposed to be doing, but we knew we should be doing something, and so we came up with this program, and it's been wildly successful.
It is innovative, and it is one you certainly should be taking a victory lap on. When you look at other cities and towns, very few, if any, have adopted similar approaches to what is a nationwide problem.
It is.
Okay, and how would you like to see that change going forward or expanded?
You know, I think that there is an effort. There's a bill open at the state level to improve the child tax credit, child care tax credit, and so we're at the table with that, having those conversations. I think that there's opportunity for the businesses to play a role. Exactly what that role looks like, I'm not sure. You know, yeah. I was on a panel in Washington with some of the major companies in the country that are international companies as well that do have really robust child care programs. We're different here because we have so many small businesses that really, you know, can't afford to pay for everybody's child care. So, you know, there's got to be some middle ground there. We're looking at some pretty innovative things, ideas, and we'll just see where that goes.
Okay. Before I get to things that frustrated you, any other accomplishments we should touch on?
I'm just really proud of Park City for stepping up. We had record involvement over the last 4 years with people applying for boards and commissions and Planning Commission, and as well as task forces that mm-hmm. I appointed. Mm-hmm. When we reached out for neighborhood involvement with the general plan, we were hoping to get 3 residents from each of our neighborhoods. We had over 100 people apply, and I think that speaks really highly to the engagement of our community, and I'm thrilled with that. I'm really happy that I feel like we've reopened City Hall to encourage that kind of involvement. People have come out every time I've done a open session meet up with the mayor where we can have 8 appointments, and people come in. They come in prepared, and they come in with ideas about things that can be improved, and they have suggestions for improving. I was really worried when I first took office and did my first one that it was going to just be a bitch session. Yeah, and it was not at all, and it's just really been great. Our young people have really come in through those with ideas that they have and just need to know what next step can they take. So it's been really fun.
Okay. What do you wish you'd gotten done that didn't get done? What has been your greatest frustration?
Senior center.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I have advocated for that since I've been on the council, and it's just kind of been start and stop, start and stop. I think I'm really proud of the relationship that the city has with the senior center. We kind of pushed the reset button when I first took office, and we have a phenomenal growth at the senior center. I was at their annual meeting last week, and they now have 700 members. 700.
Wow.
Which is just a different animal than when I first started working with them. And so they have a very active group, subcommittee that's working with our team to design the new center. And, you know, I certainly would have loved to not only had a shovel in the ground but cut the ribbon on it, but it's just not quite there yet. Making great progress, and it'll be back in January, I believe, for further discussion with the new council.
And I assume you'd also add the five-acre site to that list?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. I think that's a gift that keeps on giving. It just is there. But Bryn Shore is back at the drawing table now, taking council comments into future planning on it, and that'll come back right after the first of the year, too.
And what do you think are the biggest challenges that are going to face the new mayor and the new council in the next, say, 3 to 5 years?
I think recognizing that Park City doesn't have a money tree growing in the backyard, that some people think that we do. And the council's going to have to make some tough decisions because we have some great projects that are expensive coming up. Mm-hmm. Senior Center, Bonanza Park, Clark Ranch are just, you know, a few. And how can we partner with other people? What other funding sources might we be able to tap into to help pay for those projects? Because none of them are cheap.
No.
And they're all very important projects. And so how do they balance the funding that's going to be required to do all of those?
And I assume that segues into how do you best prepare for and take advantage of the Olympics?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, my conversation with people has always been, who do we want to be in 2035? And so that we're not building just for the Olympics. I'm super excited that in January, both Mayor-elect Dickey and our acting city manager Jody Emery are going to be going to Cortina as part of an observer program where they'll spend days behind the scenes with the organizers of those Olympics, learning the logistics, learning how do you do security? How do you do traffic? How do you do your transportation? Cortina and those games over there are very different logistically, sure, than certainly what we're going to be doing here. But I'm excited to see what they come back with, and that I think that'll be a real catalyst for how do we organize here.
Okay. Thanks, sir. Sorry about that. We mentioned the Olympics.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's something that you've enjoyed spending time with.
Honestly, when I was making the decision whether or not I was going to run for re-election, that was a factor.
So you would be going to Cortina.
I would be going to Cortina. I'm very jealous that I'm not. I my seat on the steering committee, as well as my seat as a vice chair on the host communities committee.
Will they go to Ryan?
Yeah. And mm-hmm. So I've done the warm handoff. He attended the steering committee with me a couple weeks ago. And then yesterday, or the day before, was the host communities committee. And so I did the handoff there.
What else are you going to miss?
I'm going to miss the staff at City Hall. They are absolutely rock stars, each and every one of them. You know, their expertise, their professionalism, their enthusiasm, let's get the job done. And they could make a lot more money working in the private sector, and they choose not to because they like public service. And so it's energizing for me to walk down the hall and, you know, have a quick conversation about an upcoming project.
So let me ask you this. Did the job end up taking more time than you expected or about the same?
It's a 24/7 job, you know. I mean, it really is, because you wake up in the middle of the night solving problems at 3 in the morning. You're always on call. You're never really off duty. So it's all-encompassing.
And that, of course, it takes me to the next question. What are you going to do with all that time now, Mayor Nan?
It's scary. I'm not sure.
Really?
I'm used to being so scheduled and you know, having my life planned out weeks and weeks in advance. Of, all right, and this Wednesday I'm going to be there at 10 o'clock in the morning. So I'm going to, the nonprofit sector is always my heart. Mm-hmm. I look forward to getting back into volunteering. I haven't had time to do that for several years, and so I look forward to doing that. We have a second home in Florida that I've been to very rarely over the last years, so I want to spend more time there, and I'm going to get back in with my book club.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mayor Nan Worrell, thanks for spending time with us this morning. Thanks for being here on so many Fridays, and thanks for your service to the city.
Thanks. I really appreciate that.
In the classic film, The Wizard of Oz, the Cowardly Lion delivers the memorable line, "Unusual weather we're having, ain't it?" And while he was talking about falling snow, these days in Park City, we are, of course, observing the opposite. On the phone to help us put this unusual weather into context is National Weather Service meteorologist Brittany Whitlam. Morning, Brittany.
Morning.
Unusual weather we're having, ain't it?
Very much so, yeah.
So it certainly feels, you know, subjectively, as though November and December have been unusually warm, and there certainly hasn't been the usual snowfall we would expect. What can you tell us about this pattern and how it compares with similar patterns in the past?
Yeah, so after a record-breaking October in terms of rainfall, especially here in Salt Lake City, we even saw the fifth wettest October. It's certainly been a whiplash experience these past couple months. So at least in Park City, they don't have as robust of temperature and precipitation records as Salt Lake City. But for the data that we do have available dating back to 1992, the period between November 1st and today is currently the third driest on record in terms of total precipitation. And then in terms of the comparison for the past for temperatures, the same period was the warmest on average in terms of average temperature on record. So both of these factors have resulted in a record low snowfall in the Wasatch Back, with Park City only receiving 2.8 inches over since November 1st.
And I understand Salt Lake City has yet to see any?
Yeah, so far we've only received a few days of trace amounts of snow with our recent storms, so we haven't actually received a measurable snowfall yet this winter season. We're currently sitting at the fifth latest measurable snowfall on record, and those records date back to 1884. We do have a ways to go for the latest first snow, which currently stands at January 2nd, and that occurred in 1891. But unfortunately, given the warmth of our upcoming storms over the next week, chances are unlikely to see that first snowfall through at least Christmas Day.
And would that allow you to overtake number four?
Yeah, at least for number four, it's coming up on the 23rd, and then the other ones will be sitting at Christmas Day, so December 25th. So, yeah, we're looking like we're going to at least make it to number two.
Wow. Okay, so we've just sort of, and you mentioned that these records are only going back about 30 years, but they are still an extraordinary divergence. We all know that weather varies from year to year. And one of the things that I wonder about is if I had a scatter graph of little dots showing a weather pattern, am I going to say, and I tried to draw a line through it, would that line be slowly declining? In other words, you know, are we seeing sort of normal variance, or are we in fact seeing an overall observable trend in terms of both temperature and precipitation?
Yeah, the only thing to be spoken for climatologically for our records is that we have seen an overall upward trend in temperature pretty much across the entire West, though that overall trend varies in magnitude depending on your location. And then in terms of precipitation, we don't have too big of a correlation over the past several years or so in any observable trends of an upward or downward movement.
And again, I don't mean to blindside you, but other parts of the country are not seeing similar extraordinary warmth. Indeed, some of them are seeing a lot of fairly significantly cold and snowy temperatures, cold temperatures and snowy conditions.
Yeah, currently, right now, at least over the West, we're seeing a pretty prolific atmospheric river pattern starting to set up. In the Pacific Northwest, we saw some pretty warm and rainy warm and rainy conditions up there, whereas in the East, they've been pretty cold and actually have seen a lot more snow than even we have. I mean, I'm from Ohio, and I know that at my parents' house back there, they've gotten more snow than even we have in Salt Lake. So it's just really the large-scale pattern right now. Just the West has been under a pretty big area of high pressure, which has been supporting those warmer atmospheric rivers, where the East has seen cooler temperatures.
And it is the unusual year when they have better snow in Switzerland this time of year than we do.
Oh, for sure.
Let me ask you, we hear these terms El Nino and La Nina. Are either of them part of what we're experiencing?
Yeah, so El Nino and La Nina, they're basically just the terms to describe sea surface temperature across the equatorial Pacific and then how they correlate to weather patterns across the globe. At least here in northern Utah, we don't have a strong correlation through these phases. We're currently in a weak La Nina phase, and we're actually trending towards more neutral to El Nino conditions. And in this type of pattern, it'll favor a storm track that goes further north of us, so favoring the Pacific Northwest, which, again, we've seen rainier conditions up there than we have down here. So at least for analog years, for weak La Nina conditions, which we're currently under right now, northern Utah has seen both below average and above average winters. So, again, no strong correlation for our area.
And is there hope on the horizon for a good ski season? I mean, can this thing turn around?
Yeah, I mean, there is hope on horizon for a good ski season. We've got a couple noteworthy storms in the queue for northern Utah mountains over the upcoming week. The first one's actually moving in today. It'll be on the warmer side with snow levels around 7,000 feet, but we're looking at the potential for about 2 to 4 inches above this elevation and perhaps some light snow accumulations even down to the Park City area late tonight and Saturday morning. And we're also seeing some indications for another storm around Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. Again, it's looking to be a little bit warmer, but it does have a pretty good prolonged moisture trap associated with it. So we've got some snow in the forecast. It's looking pretty good. Obviously, like I said, we're pretty behind on what we should be for this time of year, but it is worth noting that March is usually the month that makes or breaks our winter seasons, and also that even a bad snow year in the central Wasatch is considered a good ski year in the other locations around the U.S. So.
And again, have there been years where you've had this kind of a slow start and the season has, in fact, recovered?
Yeah, I mean, we've had plenty, especially in December, where we've had slow starts. I know 2017 is a pretty good analog for that, where we started out pretty slow in December, and then we actually saw a way above average end of the season because of that heavy snow in March. So it'll really be that February to March timeframe we'll be watching this really make up for what we've been missing out on.
All right, Brittany, anything else you want to add before we go?
No, I think that's it. Everyone have a good ski season and stay safe out there.
Summit County has shot down a request from Canyons Village to issue government bonds. KPCW's Connor Thomas explains. The developer is looking to finance the full build-out of the base area.
The Summit County Council denied the Canyons Master Developer's request for a public infrastructure district in a 3-2 vote Wednesday. PIDs can allow private property owners to issue bonds and access low-interest financing usually reserved for governments. They pay back the loans by taxing themselves. Only about half the density Canyons Village is entitled to is built. Councilmember Roger Armstrong predicted a public infrastructure district would accelerate the rest of its development. He voted to deny the request from developer TCFC, an affiliate of Talisker Corporation.
It's going to happen anyway. Is the question is, do we want to make it, do we want to throw a match on it and make it happen in 3 years?
Councilmembers Megan McKenna and Candace Hart also voted against the Public Infrastructure District, or PID. However, Hart acknowledged Canyons Village is mostly second homeowners who pay more in taxes, yet could consume less of the county's services. Extra revenue might stave off tax hikes on locals.
Which one do you value more, the tax revenue? Or do you value, you know, maybe you're not going to ever avoid the growth. Maybe you just slow it down. Or it just sort of evens out the pace of it.
Attorney Sam Elder told the council efficient financing may not bring faster development so much as better quality development. And Councilmember Tanya Hansen was concerned about anecdotes she hears from former colleagues in the ski and lodging industry. They tell her that Deer Valley East Village is pulling business and tax revenue across the county line.
I personally would love to see a conference hotel to offset. The biggest meeting space in our area right now is the new Grand Hyatt in Deer Valley East. It was Stein's, followed by Grand Summit.
Developer TCFC's representatives pointed to the 1999 Canyons Village Development Agreement, which they say lays out what Summit County wants to happen at the ski area, and a PID would facilitate that. Steinerville Basin resident Nick Schapper was one of two locals skeptical of the newly popular financing mechanism.
What guardrails are you putting in these different pots of money that are popping up around the county?
Councilmember Chris Robinson says the irony is that Summit County does not want to put guardrails on PIDs, which by law are independent. That's because the Utah State Auditor suggested last month that if counties and cities have authority over PIDs, they're financially responsible for them. That could make public infrastructure districts a financial liability, and the auditor's opinion has garnered pushback from the Utah legal community. Dave Thomas, Summit County's ranking civil attorney, explained the auditor based their opinion off of best practices recommended by the Governmental Accounting Standards Board, or GASB.
Which I think was what was infuriating with the state auditor's opinion, because GASB is not a law. GASB are policy provisions for accountants. And I think they mixed law with policy to try to bring PIDs under the authority of counties and cities, which is absolutely
under the obligation of counties and cities,
which is absolutely contrary to what a PID is.
Hansen and Robinson were assured that a Canyons Village PID was set up to be suitably independent, not a liability or drag on Summit County's own credit. They were open to approving it. Robinson says the PID was actually the Canyons' Plan B. The developer previously asked Summit County to take on liability during the rest of the base area development.
The county was asked to consider using its full faith and credit or a portion thereof in helping TCFC pledge properties, and we elected not to do this.
Without access to government financing, TCFC may end up with higher interest rate loans. It's unclear what that means for the development timeline. Summit County is a financial supporter of KPCW. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
As measles started to spread across the country, the Summit County Health Department took a proactive approach. KPCW's Christine Weller reports that it partnered with school districts to protect students before outbreaks in the Wasatch Back.
Summit County's three school districts and the Summit County Health Department began collaborating over the summer to prepare for and try to prevent local measles outbreaks. With the Health Department, Park City Schools hosted measles, flu, and COVID-19 vaccine clinics. Park City School District Superintendent Lindsay Huntsman said those efforts vaccinated almost 300 students and parents, protecting them ahead of the flu season.
This is really in an effort to keep our kids in school. We want them safe, we want them healthy, and if they're not healthy, then they can't come to school.
Health Department Director Phil Bondurant told the Park City School District Board of Education Tuesday the time it takes to get vaccinated is much less than a doctor's visit or days home sick from school.
You can't even get your kids out of the car into the doctor's office in 7.5 minutes, but we can get an entire family through in 7.5 minutes.
Summit County spokesperson Derek Sidaway said the most successful clinic vaccinated more than 100 people during Trailside Elementary's parent-teacher conferences. He said the clinics were about more than vaccines. They were to educate the community as well.
It was an opportunity to talk directly to families that were scared and provide information. We'd love just to increase that accessibility, that availability, making sure that we're hearing what barriers families, staff, students might be having.
Sidaway said this helps the health department improve and fine-tune its offerings and programs to best serve local needs. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
Utah fire officials have released the map of who will pay new annual wildfire mitigation fees. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports it's part of a new law to address home insurance issues.
The high-risk wildland-urban interface map released Thursday is a requirement from a new state law, House Bill 48. The law and accompanying fee area aim to ensure residents are protecting themselves and their neighbors from wildfires. State Forester Jamie Barnes explained last month HB 48 is a response to Utah's rising insurance costs.
It's not the entire state that is painted red, and the whole state is not at high risk. So this is the first step that they've taken to really try to address the insurance issues in the state.
HB 48 required the Utah Division of Forestry, Fire, and State Lands to identify where development meets wilderness, the area called Wildland Urban Interface, or WUI. Under the law, properties with the most risk in the WUI must start paying into the Utah Wildfire Fund next year. The fee is only on taxable structures, not empty lots. After months of uncertainty, the map of who's in and who's not in the higher risk areas is finished. It's online at kpcw.org. It includes homes sandwiched between wildland areas and other development. State fire officials didn't announce the exact fees when they released the map. Insurance companies will also be required to use the standardized map to classify structures as high-risk wildland-urban interface. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Wasatch County Sheriff Jared Rigby says his office is making some changes as it heads into 2026. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports those changes include more frequent check-ins with county leaders.
At a Wasatch County Council meeting Wednesday, Sheriff Jared Rigby shared updates from his office, including new service contracts and efforts to improve transparency. The Wasatch County Sheriff's Office has had a rocky year, including two outside investigations into allegations of retaliation and mismanagement. Rigby said he'd like to have more regular updates with county council members.
We'd like to invite at least three members of the council to our office on a quarterly basis.
He also introduced retired Washington City Police Chief Jim Keith, who Rigby said is providing an outside perspective on the sheriff's office.
Organizations over time can develop groupthink, or they could use someone from the outside to come in and to give them suggestions.
Also Wednesday, the council passed a $129 million budget for Wasatch County for 2026. That includes $19 million for the sheriff's office, an increase of over $2 million from 2025. Part of Rigby's funding request is to hire a new professional standards director. Councilmember Spencer Park expressed some concern that the new hire should be outside the sheriff's office.
I think it's a resolution that we would do maybe in January or at least look into, so that anything in there could be reviewed without fear of retribution.
Leaders agreed to add that suggestion to a future agenda. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
You've been listening to the Local News Hour. Well, coming up, we'll have the community campfire. This week, they're going to take a look at how the Wasatch Back is keeping the community fed and happy during the holiday season. Amber's going to introduce you to the Agnew family, the ones behind the Christmas Meals Initiative that brings together volunteers of all ages to provide meals to those in need. And Andrew will take on a journey with the owners of Indigo Highway, a boutique shop in Kimball Junction that is also donating meals, but by selling candles. And Monday, coming up on Mountain Money, Kevin Kennedy and I will be talking to Tarpley Hitt. She's the author of Barbieland, a fascinating look at the history of the biggest selling doll in U.S. history.